All right, two tired dudes coming at you with the Rush Machine RMNB podcast on this warm, gauzy Friday morning. Hey, Ian, are the Washington Capitals good?
You know, that's a great question. Those first two games, boy, I was pretty excited. I was like, man, I'm a hater. And five games later, or the last five games, they do not look, you know, that their holes in D are just tremendous. I don't know. I've been really impressed about, with some of the players on offense. Ovi looks great. Kuznetsov looks like he's taken the next step in his development, which is really exciting. Backstrom somehow looks better. Oshie is shooting like 50%, you know. But the back, you know, the bottom six haven't really scored, and the defense is woof.
I'm not even sure who really counts as the offense right now. The poor defense with Niskanen out. I mean, do you put a lot of stock in that, like, that road trip in Jersey and Pittsburgh where they lost two in a row in regulation and just totally fell apart? No, I'm sorry, it was New Jersey and Philly where they just totally fell apart in Philly and gave up with like an eight spot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that, I mean, I know it's like early goings, but do you put a lot of, you know, stock in that? Like, does that tell you who these Caps are? Or does that just tell you that, like, hey, this was an exhausted team that's still trying to figure out what their blue line core is?
I don't know. I think there's a few things going on. I think obviously they're trying to find the right mix on defense. I think that when you lose Matt Niskanen, I mean, it goes from it's a pretty good defense to, oh, good God. Like, you know, Carlson is, he's had his struggles. I mean, he's a good puck mover and he can play a lot of minutes, but I think it just further exposes some of the guys who maybe are in positions that they can't really handle from Carlson. Orlov is a great defender, and I think he's going to be, you know, the best defender on their team for many years to come. But
yeah.
Without Niskanen, he, you know, you just get a little nervous about him. Orpik gets way too many minutes. Everybody gets overextended. But I think the other thing is going on, too, is, I just think there's a lot of holdover angst / unhappiness from last year, how they lost, you know, and there's really no changes to the team. We can talk about how, like, well, there's like five new rookies on the team, but, you know, the philosophy of the team did not change. They're just older and worse. If I were on that team, I'd struggle to have 100% care. You know what I mean?
I do. When you said that they're struggling to find the right mix on defense, I immediately thought of cooking, and then I thought of the culinary visionary that is Papa John, and his known axiom: better ingredients, better pizza.
Wow, that's deep. That's deep.
And if you don't have good ingredients, it really doesn't matter how you mix those ingredients up, because the pizza's still gonna suck. Which reminds me about Papa John's pizza, which isn't very good. Hey, they're not gonna sponsor us. I guess I'll cut that out, right? Just in case they want. Just in case they want.
So, well, technically, we did promote them, so that's good for them.
It doesn't matter how, as long as you do it.
Really. All press is good press. Papa John's pizza. You know,
our current president is evidence of that. The like, you, I know, but I totally take what you mean, because like those new dudes, you know, the rookies in the room, no one's letting them talk. No one cares what they think. You know, like they're not like changing anyone's attitude. For the record, I kind of like what I've seen out of Christian Juice. Madison, can you just give me the official pronunciation now that
it's
he's been on television?
David Bowie.
Well, yeah, obviously it's not David
Bowie.
Right?
Yeah. Bowie?
It's Bowie, and I've been struggling with this every time I've said his name. So Madison Bowie, woof on Bowie, because holy crap, he's had some rough ones out the gate. Although I would argue in that disaster game in Philly, which I don't know why I didn't watch it live, but I masochistically watched it in replay the next morning. I would argue that Orpik was worse in that game than Bowie. And Orpik was on track to play 16 minutes this season, maybe 15, and he's playing like 22. That is in sanity for somebody of his age. I had like a Crunchy's numbers a few weeks back, and for like a 36-year-old defenseman, there's like two cohorts. There's like the guys that play like 13 minutes a night, and they're like, you know, everybody. And then there's like Lidstrom and Chara, and you're like, I wonder which of these two groups Brooks Orpik belongs to. Is he the, you know, Hal Gill getting 11 minutes? Was he Hal Gill getting 11 minutes a night? Or like Ron Hainsey, you know, whatever, Stanley Cup winning Ron Hainsey? Or is he freaking Nick Lidstrom? I don't know, man. What do you think?
I didn't have time to do an interview story where Barry was talking about, it was like last week, and Orpik played a good game. He did. But I remember Barry was like, well, that's why we signed him 3 to 4 years ago. You know, people criticize that signing, but this guy comes to play every night. And I was like, oh, no, Barry, don't make this argument.
Barry, you did nothing. You didn't sign him that contract. You don't have to carry that water for your boss, do you? I guess you do if you're in a negotiation. You know, you want to get in good with Brian McClellan right now.
Brian, is that a new suit?
Have you lost weight, Brian? You look great.
I bet Barry had a lot more to do with that signing than maybe we might know. But no, I think with Bowie, the thing with him, I've talked about this a few times, is that I think that when he was such a, sometimes when guys are really, really good in junior, sometimes that can be a bad thing. For instance, like Stan Gallia, for instance, he was a good skater. He could stick handle past anybody in the QMJHL. Mm-hmm. But when he got into the minors, he never played system hockey because he'd just kind of twirl at the wings and just take passes and score just by kind of being in his own floaty area. He never knew how to do system hockey. Madison Bowie kind of had the same problem with Kelowna because he was just such a good skater that he would never really have to actually like forecheck or backcheck or like really do any kind of digging the puck out, where he just didn't have to battle a lot. So when I've watched him in Hershey, I see a guy who can really skate the puck well, and he has some good offensive instincts, but then sometimes on defense, he'll just struggle to do the right thing, or he'll just be a little bit shy about it. And I think
that's what he can teach, though.
I think that kind of match, like, I think you'll have a strong maturation with players that are better skaters than him. And I think that he's one of those guys that doesn't necessarily benefit from being in Hershey necessarily, because it's kind of still the same problem a little bit. But, you know, the games that I saw in Hershey last year, he's just a guy who's kind of like Orlov, where he'll have penchants for really bad defensive plays.
Yeah,
but his overall play is actually pretty good. So,
well, that's encouraging. It reminds me of the Frederick High men's soccer team, which had lots of talent. You had your Matt Slagle, your Joe Conley, your Tim McCallum. Those guys, you know, really strong forward attack there. Joe in the striker sort of midfield position. But they would go up against TJ, which, you know, didn't have the high end talent, but they were a strong systems team. And one time, that one guy clotheslined Austin White and broke his collarbone on the field at the Frederick High thing. And then me and Matt's brother almost like rushed the field and tried to beat up a guy. And then we're like, oh, wait, we would go to jail for that. So let's not do that. That reminds me, you know, of soccer from high school.
I don't really follow, but I love it.
You didn't watch boys soccer in high school?
No, I what did I do in the fall? You know, I was always kind of angry at the soccer players because, like, they got a lot of girls, and I didn't really understand it.
They got a lot of girls?
I was like, they're playing soccer. I remember in my head, that's what I said. I had some kind of, like, discrimination against soccer players.
But what on what basis? Like, it's the same sport as basketball, using different limbs.
Peter, when has jealousy ever been rational?
Sure. I knew the soccer guys, and I'm using air quotes here. I don't know if they got girls so much as they like were emotionally mature, I'm using the finger quotes again, and had steady relationships with friends of mine. I don't know. Like, unlike me, who, I don't know, whatever. Hey, welcome to the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Capitals. We're going to talk about top line Tom Wilson. We're going to talk about Brooks Lykes' new contract. And then I will have a longish chat with Jen, NHL history girl, about her charity project with the Capitals, fan community, and all the cool stuff that she's figured out in her lifetime of doing super nerdy library stuff. So let's get it.
And now it's time for the RMNB podcast.
the news came out on Thursday from the practice lines that your boy, Tom Wilson is back in his, I don't know, fated position, his destined location as the top line off wing for Alex Ovechkin. He's going to be up there with Nick Backstrom, it seems, for Friday night's game against, I think it's the Panthers. Ian, what do you make of the move there?
I think Barry Trotz is in on my bet with several readers that Tom Wilson, like, I guess he's betting that Tom Wilson will have more goals this year than suspended games. So he's putting him on the top line.
Are you counting? Are you counting the preseason ones?
Yes.
Though? Like,
do all preseason? Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have. So I've been keeping track of lines since, like, I don't know, like 2014. Like the starting lines, not like how it finishes up. I bet that I could find out how many games like Wilson's been on that top line. I mean, I know how many minutes he's been up there because I got that. He skated with those three dudes with Backstrom and Ovi 358 minutes so far, and they've been great. There's no real strong hot take about the decision to put Wilson up there because you can play my bulldog up there and they'll still get, you know, half the goals. You know, like Tom Wilson, anybody up there is going to do decent, except Jay Beagle, who is you know, is pretty rough. I think it just sort of speaks to the desperation
did
of the
you
team.
Say what? Jay Beagle would be worse than your bulldog.
Yeah, so Jay Beagle got like a 46% of the shot attempts, 50% of the goals. I think with Georgia, you know, obviously it'd be like more like a 43%, but I feel like they would make up for it with shot quality and get like 52% of the goals. Good question though, Ian. So this is sort of like a necessity with like maybe Eller will be back, maybe that the Lions will revert on Friday and we'll see everything be fine, but the injury bug and the illness bug biting the Caps at a pretty rough time, and then Andrei Burakovsky having a hard time getting going this season. It seems like it's not too early for a shakeup for Barry Trotz.
Yeah, I think that the last couple of games, Tom has actually played really good fundamental hockey, and he's been, you know, I kind of was already willing to write him off after the two straight suspensions. Like, how, you know, and I love Tom and he's a smart guy. How dumb is this guy to get suspended twice
in preseason games?
Like, it's unfathomable. You know,
and those weren't like, I mean, I guess one of those hits was kind of like ticky tacky, but like those were suspendable hits. Those were beyond the pale even for Tom. And those weren't like, those were like the combination of Tom's like charging hits, which he's been doing forever. That's the one that like ended Lubomir Visnovsky's, you know, season, and the one that he had that in-depth DOPS video, the Department of Player Safety video, where they, you know, they said we're not suspending him. Here's why, you know, it's a borderline charge, but it's not, you know, egregious.
The guy he punches all the time in the face,
Braden Schenn.
Yeah, Braden Schenn. It was that
and,
one, right?
Yeah, and but like these ones in the preseason this year combined, Wilson's like, I'm gonna go super fast and charge this dude with, hey, your back's to me as I hit you.
Yeah,
and the,
like,
puck is a mile away.
I don't know, the other ones were always like really bad, but they were, a lot of times they were bad just because speed, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like I would still argue with anyone that Visnovsky hit was completely clean. Was he trying to injure someone? I would say yes. Was it legal? Yes. Should the rules maybe cover against guys who tried to deliver clean hits but injure someone? Maybe. But
things. I think that's a defensible point that you're making there, that like what he did in that moment doesn't seem to be in defiance of the rules, but maybe the rules should have been adjusted to make not an okay hit. And it's awful. I mean, like, Wilson is thick, and I'm spelling that with two C's at the end, and like he's got that big like core strength, a little bit like Ovi, but not, you know, built like a tree trunk in the middle part of his body.
He's,
and
like, faster than Ovi too.
Yeah, and but that, all that force, all that momentum just went to like Visnovsky's, you know, collarbone, neck, and brain area, and that poor, I mean, like, he's a, Lubo was a beloved player, and it sucked that it ended his career, and that just seems to be like, you know, a part of Wilson's game. And I don't know. The physical part of his style grates on me.
Me too.
Where I don't think there's, but I think there's, it's, there are virtues to it. Not unambiguous ones. And like, if he were good at drawing penalties and good at not getting busted for penalties, which he was for a minute a couple seasons ago, but it didn't last, then I think there would be something appealing about that style of play. But I can't get past, and I'll be unloading this when the time is right. There's no good argument for him as a productive offensive player. It's just not there. It hasn't been ever. Even when he's on the top line, we'll see what happens. I'll be looking at him razor close over the weekend if he gets those top line minutes. But I am just a complete doubter, and I don't know why we lie to ourselves about what kind of player Tom Wilson is.
You know, I agree with you, but I also think that he's been doing things lately that will maybe not get him goals, but get his line goals. Just the amount of space he's creating for other people. I think on the first line, you've seen Backstrom dominate so much and Oshie connect so much, people might pay more attention to them. You know, a rebound, you know, if Oshie shoots, there's a rebound, Wilson will be in the crease. You know, I think there might be some good opportunities for him to bury stuff. And eventually I think they'll go back to Burakovsky, because I don't think anything Wilson does will really last potentially. But you know, he was a good junior player. I hate always bringing this up. He had a good shot. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you how, when he fights now, I just get like, I just want to punch him because it's just
don't,
like,
he'll win.
He needs to literally stop being physical in some ways and really just kind of recalibrate his game. And I think if he does, you know, he'll be on the ice more. And, you know, a lot of times he just never gets into the flow of the game because he's just never on the ice because he's fighting and doing all this dumb stuff. And, you know, but for me, it's the same thing as I have a lot of doubt that he'll ever be an offensive player. I know he feels that. He talked about it in interviews last week. You know, there's a lot of guys who think, I don't think he said bust, but he said there's a lot of guys who don't think, you know, I'm a good offensive player. And, you know, I want to prove him wrong. But then the next game out, he fights the guy who fought Burakovsky. So, you know, it's just like, all right. You know, so I think that he's a really smart guy off the ice. But on the ice, I feel like he's the dumbest guy sometimes.
You make a great point, though. Like, if he's making progress, I would love to be proven wrong. And, you know, hockey players aren't static things. They evolve and change over their careers, except for Jaromir Jagr. He plays the same way he did in 93. But I'm willing to see it. And he hasn't really had a sustained time on the top line since like November of 2014 or December of 2014, like that time where he had like a string of like 20 games. And he had like maybe like a week up there at the top line later in that same season. He's been, you know, a depth dude ever since. And this is probably his last chance to do so, to prove himself as a top six player. So I'm rooting for him in spite of myself.
You know, one last thing too is that I really, you know, this is almost cliche bringing it up, but I do think that first year that he played with the Capitals under Oates, I feel like his only impact on the game was fighting, being an enforcer, hitting people, bringing energy on that fourth line. And from going from a role of, I'm an offensive player on the Plymouth Whalers, and I also fight sometimes when people challenge me, to I'm just going to fight all the time. I don't think he's been able to shake it. You know what I mean? Like, it's his thing. You know what I mean? It's like he got in that role, and it seems like he's incapable of shaking it sometimes. And I think that that's really just the part that frustrates me, is that, you know, just go 3 months without fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you can't justify why you're on the team still, you know, then maybe you have more to work on.
Hey, let's but like, remember how great he was in that one playoff shift where he like saved a goal on one end and then scored a goal on the other end within like a 45-second window.
That was Hall of Fame worthy.
That's John Drew's stuff right there. Anyway, let's move on to another Capitals, a player of Capitals history and lore who has caused much consternation and debate among you and me specifically, but I'm sure a million other people. I'm talking, of course, about Brooks Like, who on Thursday night, it was announced, has signed a league minimum deal with the Los Angeles Kings, who I guess needed somebody to fill a jersey now that Jeff Carter got banged up. I'm really happy for Brooks Like. I mean, he Let's tell the story real quick, right?
Yeah, do it.
Brooks,
please.
Like, in like 2009 and 2010, those two seasons there, Brooks was putting up, you know, 20, 25 points. He might have scored 30 goals one season.
20, 25 goals.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, 20, 25 goals. Thank you, yeah. And was, you know, manifestly a top six scorer on the Capitals, a important person in the on their special teams, both sides of the special teams. It had a lot of talk for the getting the captaincy after the former captain, who is it, Chris? What was his name?
Chris Clark.
The former captain, Chris Clark. Yeah, when Chris Clark left the team, and well, I guess that was 2010. There was some talk that Lyke would take over that role. Of course, it went to Ovechkin, which is obvious in hindsight. And then the lockout happened, and Lyke went to the, I'm sure I pronounced it wrong, but the Kloten Flyers. And what was that helmet thing? He had like the flaming helmet for being like the top scorer.
Yeah, the leading scorer of the the NLA has to wear on every team a flaming gold helmet. That means that they're the top scorer on the other team. So the other teams can like focus on that player more. And I think it's for the fans too to know who the best player is.
It's like the championship belt, right? Like, yeah. You know, in the Rumble, you want to wreck the guy with the championship belt. So we ran a story about that on like a Thursday morning. You track down like the helmet deal from some, you know, Swedish paper or something. And then that same day or the next day, Lyke got wrecked in an injury. And he never really came back after that. I mean, like, he was never the same player after the lockout.
Well, don't forget.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Don't forget how he'd be like, I'm in the best shape of my life. And he'd say that.
Okay,
like,
yes. Every year. Every year he would say, I'm in the best shape of my life.
He'd have another surgery.
Yeah, so it was recurring groin issues or sports hernia issues.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, he just wasn't mobile anymore after that. You know, Mike Latta could pace him, which is, you know, worrying. And so, like, got relegated to bottom line minutes, and then eventually, like, the inevitable happened, and he got booted from the Capitals, got picked up by Toronto, where, you know, he was used sparingly. I guess he played sometimes with the Marlies, and then he was done there. But he had the professional tryout agreement with the Kings, didn't get picked up immediately, but once Carter went down, now he's got a deal. And it's, you know, another chance for Brooks Lyke to get on the ice and get the fudge off of Instagram. Jesus!
He leaves his new job as a social media guy to become a hockey player again. Oh, God, bye. No. The social media stuff, I want to just, like, jump through a wall. Remember, like, 2 years ago, he was like, I don't even know how to get Instagram on my phone. I can't follow you, Tom Wilson and Michael Latta. And now he's, like, teaching us how to do Instagram. And I just, all right.
He was doing, God damn it, he was doing, like, you know, driving in his Range Rover or whatever the hell he's driving. And he says, he's like, you know, I drive an hour each. I don't know why the hell I'm watching Brooks Lyke's Instagram stories, by the way. I can make better decisions with my time.
No, you can't.
I swear to God, I watch him while I'm taking Georgia takes 35 minutes to get down the hallway to go to the elevator now. Just one step really slow to the other. So I have a chance to go through all of my stupid Instagram stories. So Brooks Lyke's like, hey, man, let's listen to this lyric of the day. Today's lyric of the day comes from my man Macklemore. This one is, you do it for the work, not for the praise. And he's singing it along. And I'm like, oh, man, I remember the time that you played guitar and you blow at it. I don't know.
Can we talk about the masculinity Instagram or whatever?
Let's do our best shot at it. Because I don't have a problem. Like, honestly, he seems, I guess that he's probably sincere. He's just hokey as hell. And, you know, like, I don't speak for you. You could say what your piece is, but like, I agree with like his take that there are masculine postures that are, you know, corrosive to your, you know, interpersonal relationships, and you should check that. Sure, that sounds great, but I just can't stand the cloying way he does it. And then he's like, you can be, you know, you can be the most intense dude on the ice. But then you got to come home to your princess. You got to put your princess on a pedestal. I, God damn it. That like, I don't think the dude is so close to being what the kids call woke, but he's got a bit to go. Like, I don't know. Just treat people like human beings, like they've got the same complexity you do, and you'll be fine, Brooks. I don't know. You know, be intense as hell on the ice, but don't call people names. Which he doesn't. I don't know if he does. I don't know. And by the way, I was a big Brooks-like fan. I liked the dude as a hockey player. I wrote articles saying, like, man, I hope he's back. And I was excited when he was, like, the second-line center for the team for a hot minute. Though it should have been Matty Perreault.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I think I was ranting there. What do you think of the masculinity stuff?
I don't know. I mean, I had a lot of... There, you know, sometimes when you're a reporter and you hear things and you know things, sometimes those things that you hear and the things that... you know, don't square with the things that maybe someone is saying. And so you're just like, okay, it seems, I don't know. I hope him and Julianne Hough have a wonderful marriage. And, you know, I just like, I don't think that, you know, I like the fact that he's trying to have that conversation, but I don't think he has friends in his life. Let's say like I have friends like Peter Hassett or Patrick Holden who are philosophy, you know, who are big into philosophy and are very intelligent. Like, when you try to have really intelligent conversations like that, I think you really have to be equipped to have them, or you can really fall into some weird holes. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I just, when I'm listening to it, I'm just, like you said, it's hokey, and, you know, I don't know. I just wish him the best, and
you're better than I am that by wishing the best, because you're right, and he's trying and he's making an effort, and that's great.
I think,
and being hammy about it is not the worst thing in the world.
How about this, is that as a person who works in promotion, the problem I have with the whole thing, like everything, like the way he promotes his marriage, the way he made money off his wedding, when you do things like that, you're trying to project something, and he's trying to make money off those things. So in a lot of ways, to me, it just doesn't seem very genuine. And
yeah,
that's the part that bothers me, is that, you know, if you have a great marriage, or you have a great, you know, if you have a great this or that, I mean, you don't necessarily, you know, it's good to like take photos and be like, I'm really happy, you know, that's great. But like bragging about how great you are at masculinity, and, you know, like I think he's released photos of like every person from his wedding party over the last 2 weeks, and like it seems like he's trying to really embrace that celebrity and try to be more than maybe he is, which makes me think there might be some
that he's counter-programming, that he's compensating for something else.
Yeah, like exactly, and that maybe that Julianne fame makes him feel maybe a little inadequate sometimes. That, I mean,
well, so yeah, anyways. Well, I'm glad it's got the deal.
You are.
But the same thing I thought of was Mike Comrie and Lizzie McGuire.
Exactly. Hillary Duff. Exactly.
That's Hillary Duff. Thank you. And you know, Mike Comrie, well, I guess he was playing in Pittsburgh. Was he with Nashville when he was with Pittsburgh, or
no,
something like that?
But
anyway,
Pittsburgh when he first started being with her. I know that, because.
But then
he jammed up his back,
and he was done. And then that relationship was totally over.
Yeah.
Right. Like I don't know. I don't actually care about the relationship stuff, but it's important to know. It's justified to be a little suspicious when it seems that a person is concocting a brand serves them materially in the present tense, and that brand is playing against the obvious biases of any kind of power structure, but especially sports, with, you know, sports has issues of white supremacy and patriarchy and imperialism and capitalism. And those all can be really dangerous forces that we've, you know, you've seen in, you see it in Hollywood, you see it in gymnastics, you see it all over the place. And it's, I don't know, it throws up a flag when you see someone doing it without having done the necessary legwork beforehand.
Yeah.
That would have informed the way they would talk about it. And like, when you see, like, you could still treat your lady like a princess, you're like, I'm like, bro, you have missed the point. Anyway,
calling your significant other a princess too is extremely missing the point. You know what I mean? That also is a little bit, you know, your partner, you want them to be your equal. You don't want them to be my princess. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of assigning a role of lesser importance almost. Anyways,
this has been two straight white dudes trying our best to speak about these issues. I don't know. I have this great interview with NHL history girl, Jen. She's doing this really cool project. I'll let her explain all that. Stay tuned because it's a really good piece, and we'll catch up more later. This is the Rush Machine Podcast. I'm Peter, and I'm joined by Jen Conway. Jen, you might well know as NHL History Girl on Twitter. Jen's doing something really cool this week, and I suppose for the next few months as well. So I'd like to get into it. Jen, first of all, thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
So, of course. Thank you for being here. So there's this, I guess I saw it like a week or two ago, and you were putting on... It's a contest of sorts. And can you tell me about what that contest was and what you were doing in exchange for the winners?
Well, it really bothered me that there were, you know, hundreds to thousands of people without food and electricity and all of these things. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't get paid very well because I work for the state and I work in a library. So it's like double whammy of poor. And I don't really have money I can contribute. What can I do? And then I thought, well, you know, I have these 20 some odd thousand Twitter followers. Maybe I can encourage them to donate more and spread the goodness around. And so it just grew out of that.
So you combined your Eldritch library skills with a competitive contest among the different fan communities of the NHL, and the fan community that said I've given the most money and I guess shows you the receipts, they get a week of featured role on the Twitter account, and you do your normal duty in sharing just the most wonderful historical tidbits from that team. And the Capitals won, right?
Yes,
it was close though. Who was two? Who was number two and three?
Two and three were probably, I want to say the two was Penguins, and three, I'm not sure. There wasn't a whole lot of response at first, unfortunately. So for this first one, it was really kind of a low number. I think the Caps won with 23 votes.
I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I did give you the old Russian Machine retweet, but it was after you had already said that the Caps were in the lead. So I feel like I was just jumping on the bandwagon there.
The Caps were kind of in the lead from the beginning.
Right on.
Let me see here. Actually, no, it ended up being Capitals with 22 votes, Blackhawks with 13, and then Ducks with 10.
Huh. That's interesting. Distribution of teams and character types. And so and for people that aren't familiar with your account, you share on this day stuff, in this day in history, somebody with a funny name in French Canada did something crazy. You also find these amazing old photographs, and you share these pieces of trivia that the Eliash Sports Bureau wish they could get. The information is fantastic. Can you tell me? You said you work for a library. Can you tell me what's your secret? How do you get to this stuff?
Some of it's luck. Some of it is just the fact that I work in a library, and therefore, I have access to 100 years worth of New York Times newspapers. And I have the ability to request virtually any hockey reference book I want. So it's, and then on top of that, my training is partly in English and partly in history. And so when you work in history, you get really, really good at figuring out terminology. And when you're really good at figuring out terminology, then you're really good at searching for things.
I knew you were going to get there. Yeah. That's great. I mean, I'm nothing compared to you doing this professionally, but I was an English student in college, and I was a big Leo and LexisNexis nerd and spending the time in that. And it's awesome to talk to somebody that is, wizard level sorcerer skills at this stuff. So you, in speaking of history, I think one of like the first tidbits you shared this week was of something that, like, you know, most Caps fans know, that, you know, the Washington Capitals did not have the best inaugural season ever. I think it probably holds the record for worst ever in or outside of hockey. I can't imagine anybody's had a worse one. I'm sure there's like soccer teams that play 11 games in their season and lost all of them, but in these like big season, long season sports, does anybody come close?
I think the Mets, I want to say it's like the 62 Mets or something like that. There's a Mets team that comes close.
Really?
I know that. Yeah.
I mean, they play 120 some games a year, right?
Yes.
So they must have won like fewer than 15 games or something. That's amazing.
It was a pretty wild. I really don't know much about baseball because I never really was a baseball fan. My hometown was very much like hockey, football, and the very first football game I went to, I saw somebody break his leg so badly that his toes were turned the wrong direction.
Oh, I didn't even want to hear that on a podcast. Oh.
So you can see why I wasn't really a football fan.
Yeah, no, that's gross. I'm not a football fan because I hate my local football teams, both of them.
I'm not like a squeamish person, but you know, when that's the first thing you see, that's kind of a...
Yeah,
that's kind of a, well, maybe I don't want to do this on a regular basis.
So on the topic of horror, we went from the horrible first season of the Capitals. You shared this one that I would just, it totally caught me unawares. You talked about this game in 1994 between the Senators and the Caps, and it was just this massive brawl game, and like the Senators had to like share the penalty box with the Caps. And the part that got me at the end was, who was the head coach for that game for the Caps?
It was a Trotz.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I guess he was coaching the Skipjacks in Baltimore, which is like the minor league team at that time. And I guess like he got the call up to coach the majors. That's a wild one.
Yeah. Well, Schoenfeld was serving. I can't remember why off the top of my head, but he was serving some sort of fine / suspension / penalty, whatever you want to call it. And so they said, well, you know, here's the coach we have available, so let's go with it.
That's nuts. I didn't know that. It seems like Capitals coaches and management just sort of have this history of getting into a lot of trouble. Like I know, like later, I can't remember when it was, but George McPhee had like, I can't even remember what team he was against, but he was rumored to get into like a fight with like the manager of another team because the other manager sent out their brawlers to injure the Caps.
That was McPhee, and that was the Chicago coach was Lauren Mollekin, Mollekin, if you want to look it up.
Sure.
And so basically he kind of pulled the dick move, putting out the enforcers at that point in the game. And, you know, very unsportsmanlike coaching, shall we say. And so McPhee got quite incensed, and people were trying to hold him back, and he got past them, and people were trying to hold him back, and he got past them. And he got into the locker room and got face to face with Mollekin, was yelling at him, and then punched him.
That's awesome.
And they both ended up with like ripped shirts and whatnot, and they were separated by players and security. And he got a 1-month suspension from it.
Did I hear that your boyfriend is a Caps fan or something like that?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm really sorry for his travails and struggles. And that's an unfortunate choice to support. But it's good to hear that, I don't know, somebody in your position of power over, you know, command of knowledge has some interest in the Caps beyond winning charities. I saw this great one. What was the story about the Caps getting outshot like some massive amount? There was like, you know, 20 something to one. It was maybe like 24-1. Maybe it was one of the early games, and somebody goes into the locker room and says, what the quote was like, all right, who was the one that took the shot?
Yeah, like who's the smart ass who took the shot?
That's great.
Yeah, that was he was with the Red Wings for a while. I'll think of his name in a second. That's who it was. Jim Bedard.
From the first like couple seasons of the team.
Yeah, from like I think the second or third season of the team. Yeah. They were getting outshot just horribly, and they all go into the room and there's just dead silence, and finally one of the players stands up and says, "All right, which one of you smartasses took that shot?"
That's a good one. That's the best possible attitude when you're like the underdog sports team from the beginning of the like Disney 1990s sports movie. But you don't get any better in the end of it. There's just more pain and suffering. That's really what the Capitals are, right? They're like the Bad News Bears, you know, Mighty Ducks before they have new jerseys, and they just stayed that way for 30 years or 40 years. That's just they're still lovable losers.
Yeah, sadly, they've come close once.
Sort of. Yeah, shut out in the finals, right? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you're a Habs fan by fate or whatever. I would say that the best Caps team was probably the 2009-2010 team. They're I think better than that, like 98 Cup final team, and it just happened to be that your Habs stymied the Caps and shut them down. I had this horrible habit in this silly podcast where I can't stop talking about the 2010 playoffs because it feels like it's like an inflection point for the Capitals as a franchise altogether. I want to ask, so you know, you're talking about how bad those early Caps are. Abe Pollin, who was the owner of the Capitals, you know, forever up until just probably maybe a decade ago, you said that he bought the franchise, or maybe he like purchased the franchise or got like the entry fee for just $6 million, which is crazy when you think about it now. You know, that's a round of the playoffs. Well, that's no money whatsoever when you think about it in the grand scheme of things. But
that's
when
like 8 year of Oshie's salary.
Yeah. Goodness gracious. Let's not get into that. what was the thing that Abe Pollin said about the teams? And he could have said this in 80. He could have said this in 88 after the Easter Epic. He could have said this in 92 after they lost. Who was that good defenseman that wound up winning cups for Jersey?
Oh, that one.
You know, okay. I'm not trying to
that guy.
Spot.
You know what's his name?
No, that really excellent defenseman that everyone thinks of as like the one that got away.
Yeah, yeah. I think he said it probably about. He said, you know, I think some voodoo doctor in Saskatoon has jinxed us, and this was shortly before the Caps ran into trouble and were threatening to move. Which means it would have been around the time that the Blues were threatening to move. So that would have been 83. So it would have been the early 80s he would have said this, that some voodoo doctor in Saskatoon had jinxed the team.
Wow. Aside from the cultural whatevers of that, he didn't even know how bad it was going to get after that. Like the early, I watched the TV show the Americans, but it was Scott Stevens, by the way, was the defenseman I couldn't think of who was with the Caps, then dipped out. I watched the TV show The Americans. You know, it's like set in the, I guess by now it's like the mid 80s, and like the Russian spies are always smoking their cigarettes and drinking their whatever at the embassy or wherever, and they keep on like crapping on the Capitals every couple episodes, and they're like they're all terrible except for Marouk or whatever.
That sounds about right.
I love the voodoo quote, and there's I don't know, there's so much more to that. There was a David Poile, who now is the, I guess he's the GM for Nashville. Is he still? Yeah, he is. He had this great thing about Sergei Gonchar, who ended up winning cups with the Penguins. But when I really became like a nuts Caps fan, he was like my defenseman, and the quote that you shared was that he's got good speed, good hands, and we feel he's a player of the 90s. I just haven't heard somebody say that something is something of the 90s at all lately, except for when me and Ian from the website got an argument about what candy commercial The Juice is Loose was from. He thought it was Juicy Fruit, and I thought it was Starburst. a player of the 90s. I swear to goodness, I don't know what that means. I guess maybe they meant has the finesse more than you would have had.
I think he meant he was the player model for a defenseman. Like, he is the modern defenseman of the 90s. He is the future. From what I gathered, that's what he was really trying to say. So, which is smarter than saying, you know, he's the Michael Jordan of hockey.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's like, it's Lidstrom, right? It's still Lidstrom, though. I guess Poile wouldn't have a good quote about about Lidstrom, but yeah. So you had, let's see, you had some great stuff about actually Marouk from those early 80s Capitals and some the thing about, why did, you shared a thing about Clint Malarchuk going to the White House.
Yeah.
Why, and they met Reagan, why did the Caps go to the White House? I mean, like, you know, like in recent history, you know, like the Stanley Cup champions go. I vaguely remember that the Capitals have not won a Stanley Cup. So what were they even doing there?
They were the first team, one of the two first teams, actually, to go over to the Soviet Union.
And
do a tour. It was them and the Flames. And there's a funny story for you. Neither the Caps or the Flames were the first choice of the NHL to go over to the Soviet Union. The Nordiques, they asked the Habs, the Rangers, the Nordiques. And the fourth team you'd have to find on my podcast that I do called the Soderstrom Bubble, because we talked about this a couple weeks ago. But neither the Caps nor the Flames were the first choice. The Rangers said, screw you, we're the Rangers. We've already given up enough players to international competition and travel over the past few years. We don't need to do this, and, you know, see you later. The Nordiques said no, because they are a small market team. They didn't want to spend the money and, you know, all of the effort, and, like, they just felt like it was too much outlay for them, so they didn't want to do it. And then, so they went to the Caps. So the Caps were like, yeah, we'll do it. We need all the exposure we can get. So that's how the Caps ended up in the Soviet Union. But also, a couple members of the Caps team were former Olympians, I believe. I think there was one or two. And so they'd been to the White House before. And, yeah. So it was part of the Goodwill tour, basically. They went to the White House and a reception there and went off to, I think, Stockholm and then to the Soviet Union.
That's
awesome.
It might not be
Stockholm. It might actually be, like, Helsinki, or it was one of the larger Nordic cities where they did, like, a quick little stop off, and then they went off to the Soviet Union. Yeah,
Helsinki would make a lot of sense if it's, like, anti-communist reach out perestroika stuff, because they were, you know, that was like the heart of the, you know, NATO core and the line there. That's awesome. And I feel like the Russian culture reach out ultimately paid off for the Capitals with, you know, one or two Russian players that they've had since then.
Yeah, I think that was another reason the Caps went. They liked scouting in the Eastern Bloc. I mean, you know, that's kind of how they got Bondra, kind of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he's still, you know, with the organization now. He's doing, like alumni stuff. He's great.
Yeah, I actually have to reach out and email him for something completely different soon. But I've heard he's a lovely person, so I'm looking forward to finding out whether or not that's true. Everyone said, oh, you got to talk to Locker. And I said, well, of course I have to talk to Locker, because Locker talks to everybody.
Yeah, you can't shut him up.
I love him. I interviewed him once, quite a few years ago. I was doing an internship with the Flyers, and part of my school credit requirement was, well, I had to do some sort of, you know, study project, or, you know, how I spent my summer, or, you know, whatever it is that they make interns do these days. And so I said, okay, well, I'll do some, you know, oral history interviews with players. And I got one with Craig, and he's like, well, the only time I have, unfortunately, is, like, this, you know, 2-hour stretch before the pregame. Can you make it to DC? And I was like, well, of course I can. And then someone else was kind enough to give me tickets to the game, so I didn't have to just go up there, do the interview, and then leave the building as everyone else was coming in.
Right.
And I just had the most fantastic time talking to him. He was just, And then, unfortunately, he gave me this image in my head that I will just never be able to burn out no matter how hard I try. And it's Al Iafredi, and it, of course it is. And I just, ugh.
I mean, dare I ask what this image is?
Well, sure, because you can edit it out if you know, if it grosses you out, too. But,
sure, let me just do like a real quick snap here so I know where to snip it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so we're chatting about, you know, like superstitions and like what's the weirdest things you saw your teammates do and what was your superstition? And Craig's was, well, you know, the older I got, the slower I got. And I thought if I thought for some reason if I quit wearing socks, I'd go faster. And I was like, okay, well, that vaguely makes sense in that, you know, sort of like 3-4-year-old way, like new sneakers make you go faster. Why not, you know, less clothing makes you go faster. Works for me. And he's like, but nothing is ever going to top Al. And I'm like, and as soon as he said Al, I just went, oh God, please no. Dear. And I was like, okay, well, what did Al do? And he's like, oh, Al would do this thing where he'd light a cigarette. Of course he did.
Of course.
And he would slap on his helmet and he'd slap on his skates. And that's how he'd walk around. I'm like, oh, so he's being dressed. And he was like, no. Put on his helmet. And he put on his skates. And he smoked his cigarette. And he taped his stick. And he did his stretches.
Oh, my goodness. In like the Piney Orchard or the Cap Center locker room. That's, wow.
Yeah. And I'm just going, in my head, like, you can hear it on the tape. I just completely lost it, and Craig had completely lost it. I mean, the two of us were just giggling for like a good 3 minutes straight. We couldn't help it. And after that, we were both like, so, I don't really know where to go from there.
Yeah, you can't top that. My experience is that a lot of the guys that are alumni of the Caps are really gracious with their time and really, you know, patient with like a total dilettante like me, and any of the ones that aren't, I wouldn't even mention on the podcast anyway. So they're, you know, they're all lovely folks.
Yeah, the only one I've truly heard negative things about, and again, you can clip this out if you like. The only one I've truly heard negative things about is Adam Oates.
Yeah, I don't need to edit that out because everyone agrees. Everyone, that's like an open secret that Adam Oates is a little bit of a personality.
Yeah,
he's one of those guys that he just like bought into. He believed the everything, every compliment he ever heard about himself. He's taken to heart.
Well, the funny thing is a while back I was rummaging around the internet's attic. And I came across this interview that Adam did ages ago. And I mean, like, years ago. Probably around the time he retired, if not shortly before. And he's talking about, like, what a terrible kid he was. Like, he dropped out of high school. And he was just like, I was this little punk, you know? I was this little punk hanging out at the gas station, no job, no school, like, wearing this ripped-up leather coat.
Yeah.
And, like, he was just... happy to admit, you know, like, what a little punk he was. And it didn't seem like, you know, he really had any regrets about it. Whereas on the other hand, you have a guy like Eddie Balfour, who was kind of a jerk in high school as well. And that was just because he was, you know, a teenage boy.
An idiot, yeah. Like all of us.
Yeah, I mean, he's just your average teenage boy who was more interested in cars than school, which, you know, I get that. I like cars. But Eddie went to a thing in his hometown in Carmen, Manitoba, and the whole community basically came together to hear him speak and have this little lovely, you know, celebration dinner with him. And he got up, and rather than say, you know, I want to thank my mom for all her hard work and my dad for driving me to the rink, which he did say, instead of just stopping there, he started addressing individual people in the room. And saying, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, you were my math teacher, and I am so sorry I treated you the way I did.
Aww.
And so-and-so, you were my boss at the car shop, and, you know, I'm really sorry I lipped off the way I did about that one carburetor. Like, you know, this is 15 years later. And he's going around the room apologizing to everyone he felt he was a jerk to in high school.
That's great. Like, there's, I don't know, the sport's like a crucible in a lot of ways. It'll reveal your foibles, or it'll refine you into, I don't know, a person of substance, which, you know, Oates kind of failed that test, didn't he?
Yeah, well, so did Tom Barrasso, so, you know.
Yeah. So what's left for, you know, Caps Week?
Oh, well, there's 2 days left. Well, 2 afternoons left, I should say, once all of the usual morning stuff is done.
Mm-hmm.
There will be some commercials, some old commercials.
Oh, yeah, there's some good ones. I mean, I just remember, like, the 2000, like, always intense ones where they got really high concept. But there's older, like, you know, I don't know, early 90s ones that are pretty rad, too.
Yep, and of course there's the classic Colzig commercials.
Yes. God, those were great. Those are wonderful.
And there will be a behind-the-scenes story about one of them. There will be some more photos. I was giggling like an idiot. I was sitting at work, and I usually take a couple minutes. Like, I do my work at work. Let me be clear. I don't, like, futz around on the computer all day. I actually do work. But I take a couple minutes. I'm like, I'll just find, like, a quick funny photograph of, I don't know, Brendan Witt. And so I'm clicking through, and then all of a sudden I'm like, why am I staring at the face of Nickelback here? And then that goes on to Twitter, and I think the caption was something like, hello, I'm here to audition for the Nickelback tribute band.
Yeah, that one got me out loud.
Yeah, like, I saw it, and I giggled out loud, and my coworkers are looking at me like, are you okay?
The Brendan Witt getting hit by a car, then playing that night story is always a good one.
My favorite part is he stands up there like, are you okay? He's like, F you, I'm a hockey player. And he walks away.
He was definitely like a quintessential hockey player type at the time when that happened. Like, I feel like I loved Brendan Witt as a kid. And if I watched him today and he was playing for my Capitals, I'd be like, oh, get off the ice, Witt. Like, I can't take it. But I loved him back then.
It's hilarious, the players we go through as we grow up as fans.
So so you are NHL History Girl on Twitter. How else should people follow you? What's the podcast again, please?
It's the Soderstrom Bubble. It has its own Twitter feed, which is mostly just announcements of, you know, hey, we just did a podcast, or hey, we found this cool little thing. And that one is SDR Strom Bubble.
Cool. I will share that in the notes of the episode and everything like that. Jen, I want to thank you so much for making the time. I want to thank you so much for doing this project that is both very edifying as a Caps fan and also, you know, serves a better, you know, moral good. I think that's a great thing you're doing, and I've always enjoyed your content, and I thank you for gracing the podcast with your presence.
Yeah, anytime. I love, you know, blurting out nerdy facts about random hockey things.
And you're so damn good at it.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now, it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.